Chris, a stoat.
Looking at us.
Right in front of the truck. It's heading straight towards us. That is an unbelievable sight.
Oh, rat's interested. It's running under the car.
It's gone under the car.
It's got a bright white bib.
Yes. Oh, Matthew. I couldn't wish anything better because, believe it or not, we're going to talk about stoats this morning. Because, oh, there it is. It's just hooked into the side of the woodland here. We're on the edge of Kentley Hill Plantation. That's 12 acres of mature woodland. But basically...
We were just driving along in the farm vehicle, weren't we?
Yes. Basically, the woodland is a rabbit warren with 200 or 300 rabbits here. And I drive down this track every morning. And a week ago... I was driving along the edge of the wood here and turned up the hill, and on the crest of the hill I thought there were two grey squirrels going in and out of the woodland at lightning speed. And I thought, oh, they're mating, or they must be sort of getting very amorous to behaving like that. I'll open the door and Rat can go out. He won't catch that, but it's secreted down a rabbit burrow at the moment.
What a way to start the podcast this week. Welcome along to the Countryside Podcast with Farmer Chris Skinner. We're on High Ash Farm, just on the outskirts of Norwich, beautiful square mile of Norfolk countryside. It's a warm day as well, not quite as warm as of late. And we're out and about now, and the stoat has disappeared.
Yes, amazing. I couldn't have wanted anything better than to see one in the flesh. Mustela ermina, one of the several species closely related to weasels, polecats, pine martins as well. And absolutely stunning to see one like that. Sometimes they will come out in the open during daylight hours. Weasels are much, much smaller, and you can tell the difference, not just by the size, but if you notice, the underside of the stoat was creamy, almost pure white, and the demarcation line between the brown on the back and the white belly underneath is smooth. It's a straight line on the stoat, so smooth for stoat, and then a weasel, it's wavy. And they're the larger members of the family there, much larger than the weasel. So a male stoat, which is what I think we just saw, is about 12 inches 30 centimeters from tip of nose to tip of tail, and they are ferocious carnivores. And in our country, it's the only mammal that can kill prey much larger than itself. So it can comfortably kill a rabbit, and they are incredibly fast, which is what attracted me to the far end of the wood this earlier last week. And I managed to get the camera there, and I caught some of the film. And looking at it in the farm office, I just burst out laughing because they are lightning speed. Their legs move in a blur so quickly that they seem to spend more time in the air. And obviously it was a male and female stoat, and just doing a courtship dance. Just stunning, and I managed to capture just a few seconds of it, but it's made me laugh every time I see it.
They run with this arched back, don't they?
Yes, they do, and that's the secret of how they move so quickly. So it does appear arched, but when they move, they kind of... front paws go forwards and the back paws stay where they are, and they kind of go along like a caterpillar, but it's done at lightning speed. And that's why they're formidable carnivores, because they can catch a rabbit. Now, you would think a rabbit can outrun a stoat, because rabbits get quite a burst of speed on to get back to the warren for safety. Firstly, they're not safe if they do get back to the warren, because a stoat is small enough to go easily down a rabbit hole. They're quite sort of sinuous animals, and they can bend and twist. And during the winter months, before I forget to mention it, in the northern part of the UK, stoats turn white, and that's called ermine, and hence the scientific name Mustela, which is a family name, ermina, which is referring to that white colour that northern stoats go to in the winter months. It's all really sort of depending on the temperature, the the nighttime temperature particularly, and if there's snow on the ground. And a brown stoat can turn completely white, go to ermine in other words, in about 3 days. It's amazing. The white coat is underneath, but it's the coat loss of the old brown coat happens incredibly quickly. And ermine, as we know, is worn in the House of Lords. I think there are various bands around the ermine, which some of the lords wear, the peers. And I think if there are four bands of little black dots, and that's the only difference on the stoat that doesn't change colour to ermine, it's the tip of the tail. They always have that black tip, which just disappeared into the woodland. Rats going up and down this track, he said, wow. And the other thing is, they emit a very strong smell.
So Rat will be getting that now.
Yes, he will. He'll be picking that perfume up. He's coming along towards us with his nose right on the ground, his tail wagging. And we used to, at school, if the boys weren't too good with their underarm deodorant, the old saying was, "Of course, you stink like a stoat, boy." And they were our school friends. And because stoats have this incredibly pungent smell, and what happens is, as well, because stoats will often set up a territory in a rabbit warren, and often the rabbits can be seen out playing and stoats playing out with them as well, and they tend to almost be exempt from attacks by stoats. But once a stoat attacks a rabbit, even if it hasn't caught it, if it's close to it, the rabbit becomes petrified, and it's called a stoated rabbit, and it just forgets how to run.
So it's like a rabbit in the headlamps.
Exactly that. And the stoat comes along, and although the rabbit can be more than a kilo, perhaps 5, 6, 7 times the weight of a stoat, the stoat will give it a sharp bite on the back of the neck. Obviously, because a rabbit's quite big, it's quite a slow process to actually dispatch the rabbit, so it's a bit of a bloody process. And then the stoat is incredibly strong. That lithe, muscular body is strong enough to drag a rabbit out from, like, a grass track that we're standing on into the cover of woodland, and there it will feast on the best meat on the rabbit. And amazing.
Well, we often see rabbits when we're driving along this avenue here, but not today.
No, not today. No, it's completely clear. This morning, when I drove down here early, just to check what we were going to do for the day and see what wildflowers are about, we've got hemlock in flower beside us, and there was perhaps 50 rabbits ran across in front of me. It was very, very early, and I mean early. It was about 3:30 this morning. I like a nice early start. You have the world to yourself at that time.
It's getting light then, isn't it?
It was quite light. And then a little bit of the life history of the stoat. Quite a shock, really, because the stoat, male stoat, will mate with a female after she's given birth, and then there will be young in the nest, sort of anything between 3, 4, 5 up to 12 young stoats. And the females, you know, it's almost after the 9 o'clock deadline, this, I'm afraid, the male stoat will mate with these tiny little female stoats. It's really, really unusual behaviour. And the female stoats will conceive, but they will not give birth for a year. And it's called delayed implantation of the fertilised eggs, which are inside these young stoats. They haven't got any fur on, they're blind, and they're still receptive to the male stoat.
So it's how stoats have evolved to survive and thrive.
Yes, it is. And so the female stoats will grow up, and people have kept them in captivity, knowing they haven't been near a male stoat. And then, total surprise, a year, when they're a year old, they give birth as well. So this is the time of the year that they mate, both with the young and the females that were mated the previous year as well. This delayed implantation occurs, so the fertilised eggs, they're called blastocysts, they don't actually embed in the uterus wall for many, many months, and then the normal gestation period carries on once they implant, and you've got a good food supply early next spring when the young are born. Amazing. That was a stunning, stunning sight, Gudgeon.
They're not easily spotted, are they?
No, no. I'm just gobsmacked that we saw that. Goes straight towards us, under the truck, and disappeared into the woodland edge here.
Totally amazing.
Absolutely. You've said it all. I'm gobsmacked.
So is Rat. Rat has gone skittering off, and we're stopped on one of the most popular walkways here on the farm, with lots of people taking advantage of the walking this afternoon, albeit with the weather being rather threatening overhead. And, what you can hear is Chris wading out into one of the little streams on the farm and onto a board which runs across this stream, and he's got a jug now and he's fishing into the stream. There's a bit of a drop in the stream here, like a very small weir.
Yeah, I've got another one.
Oh, I wonder what it is he's looking for. He's got the jug and he's putting creatures into another bowl here. Presumably this is our next subject. And I can see some creatures in there. One more. Rat looks fairly disinterested in the whole process. But I can see various creatures in there. Ah, you've got one.
Yep, another one. Lovely.
Yeah, well done.
Right.
Now Chris has got to extricate himself from the stream. Are you all right there, Chris?
Yes. Oh, I managed to catch two with one. So,
right, Chris, you've got the bowl. You've extricated yourself from the stream. What have we got in there? I can see movement.
Yes, Matthew, we've got side swimmers. Garameus pulex.
Side swimmers?
Yes, freshwater shrimps. They swim on their side. If you look, that one at the bottom, they're about a quarter of an inch long. One's tiny. And there's three kind of curled up into the letter C on the bottom of this white bowl so that we can actually see them. They're almost transparent.
And you pick them up from a bit of fairly still water there.
Yes.
Before the water then goes over and
drops. It goes into the lake from this point. It's a muddy stream bottom and they love slow flowing water like this. They sort of... We looked at some of the... sort of water fleas about 2 to 3 weeks ago. Daphnia and Cyclops we looked at. And these are kind of the next ones up the chain. These will eat the Daphnia and the Cyclops, and they are hugely important because they eat detritus on the base of the stream in the mud. They hide under leaves, and they generally work their way up streams, up to the heads of rivers, and you get quite high populations. So I've just managed to capture... five, in fact.
So they're just under half an inch long,
aren't
they? Yes,
they are. Transparent, and they're a really important food for many of our fish species. So things like brown trout will eat them. There's rudd in the little pond behind us as well, and they'll eat them. These freshwater shrimps have a very high level of carotene, and that's a kind of pink colour in them. You know when you boil... our saltwater shrimps or prawns, they're generally brown in colour, and as soon as you boil them, they go bright pink, and that's the carotene in them. Now, fish that eat these, freshwater fish like our brown trout here in the stream and the lake behind us, eat these, and the meat of the brown trout is bright pink. And that's where the colour comes from. So many of the farm salmon that we buy, they're fed special additives to add colour to the meat as well. So this is a real natural food, and they're absolutely brilliant. But the important thing is they really only survive and thrive in streams with chalk in them, a high pH level, and that's what this stream is. And so the other thing is they'll only really thrive and survive in clean, fresh water. They don't like pollution. So if you've got no freshwater shrimps, that generally means there's some form of pollution, either agricultural or sewage discharge, for instance. They can't cope with it. It's got to be almost clean drinking water.
So that, from your point of view, that's very encouraging, isn't it?
Absolutely. It's a pure stream. It's coming, being fed from a lake much higher up in the valley. And so it's a real success story. And I didn't know if you've ever seen them before. Pulex is Latin for flea, actually, and you know fleas spend a lot of time on their side, and that's rather why they're called side swimmers, and they're going around in this bowl. I'll put them back in a minute, but if you've never seen them before, they're quite fascinating little creatures.
Now, I think this is a first for me. Yeah, I thought you were going to fetch me out some water boatmen or someone like that.
No, shrimps, but we'd need several thousand of these to have a potted shrimp sandwich, wouldn't we?
Well, get on with it, Chris, and next week we'll have some.
They're tiny, but they are so important, and that's one of the easy things to overlook, rather, just as the Daphnia and Cyclops, the water fleas we looked at a couple of 3 weeks ago, they were swarming, and this is a great time of year to see freshwater shrimps, which we have in abundance here at the farm, a really good sign of a good healthy stream, and helps feed all the natural fish.
Side swimmers,
they've got all sorts of interesting names, but the important thing is they've got lots of carotene in, which gives fish that lovely pink colour. I love good fresh trout for dinner. That's nothing like it. That's what I've got on mouth like I have.
Back in the stream, yep, they go.
Back in the stream, nice and gently, back into the water, and here we go. Nice and safe. Muddy bottom stream, perfect for them.
So we've got some trout when we get back, have we?
You catch the trout, I'll cook it.
Oh, wasn't that nice? Rat in full voice, as ever. Well, thank you so much for listening. And if you would like to listen to the episodes in full, you can. Head to countrysidepodcast.co.uk. You can email us as well, chris@countrysidepodcast.co.uk. And don't forget, you can always call us and leave a message for Chris. Our telephone number is 01603 273 899, and we'll make sure he gets it. Thanks again.